I'm truly honored to be here. It's nice to be at a podium with just one microphone and one TV camera, and I would suggest that the audience is probably a bit more friendly than some I've encountered over the past few weeks. I'm going to start with what I'm calling interesting anecdotes, tidbits of information, and some random and perhaps not so random thoughts about the last several weeks. As Secretary Veneman mentioned this morning, I would not suggest that dealing with a national BSE crisis is the best way to spend the holidays. Certainly through this whole ordeal, we were looking at a couple of measures to measure how well we were doing, not the least of which is consumer confidence. And as you well know, consumer confidence in the safety of U.S. beef has been high, remained high, and some polls even suggest it has gone up during this period. And the second measure has been domestic cattle prices, and indeed, they did dip initially, not surprisingly, but have come back very nicely, and you all are even more familiar with that than I am. Next, we've coined the phrase, out of an abundance of caution. I'm almost pleased with the fact that our colleagues in Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security were shortly thereafter found to be using that same phrase as it related to their activities. We take credit for it. We did it. I would only add one thought. I think we need to use that phrase with some caution, because while some of our actions were based on an abundance of caution, we need to make sure that those actions are science-based as well. For example, we know from the science of this disease that milk and dairy products represent no public safety risk, and therefore we've not imposed any restrictions on milk, even from the herd in Mabton, Washington, from where this cow went to slaughter. So while we're acting out of an abundance of caution, we need to make sure that our actions are based in the science, lest we lose the credibility of the public that we currently have, because our actions have been reasonable and have been based on science. USDA has never, no, not ever, dealt with a situation or an issue that has attracted this much media interest and coverage. I can assure you that we were quite pleased when we finally found the stories on BSE below the fold on the front page of some newspapers like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post. I would quickly add that some of those publications have referred to me in many different ways, and good, bad, or otherwise. I've been referred to even as the Donald Rumsfeld of mad cow disease. Next, we did a risk assessment, or actually had the Harvard Center for Risk Analysis conduct a risk assessment, focusing not so much on whether or not we have the disease in this country, but if we do, do we have the appropriate procedures and processes in place. And in fact, they concluded that if it's very unlikely that we have the disease, if we do, that it would be at a low prevalence, and that our feed ban, among other measures, even if we had it, and even if there was only partial compliance with the feed ban, would be eliminating the disease. And FDA currently estimates compliance with the feed ban, as you know, at greater than 99%. Just to make things interesting, during late December and early January, there was record cold weather and snows in the state of Washington as our field force was going about their efforts to conduct this epidemiological investigation, look at lots and lots of animals, and in fact start the process of sacrificing some of those animals. And I raise that mainly for the point of giving credit to our hardworking field force, federal and state employees who gave up their holidays, never a whimper, never a whine, never a complaint about the fact that they were working on Christmas Day, working on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and never any suggestion that they might not be there. We just assumed that they would be there doing their job, and in fact, they were. I would quickly add, particularly from my organization, Veterinary Services, we're talking about many of the same people that gave up their Christmas holidays last year dealing with an exotic Newcastle disease outbreak in Southern California, what turned out to be the largest incursion of a foreign animal disease in the United States in the last 30 years. So I just can't say enough about how proud I am of that organization. There's been a lot of comparison to our situation in North America with that of the BSE situation in other countries, most notably member states of the European and Japan. In fact, those situations are very different. There's been a high prevalence of the disease in some of those EU member states, where in fact we know in North America, particularly in Canada and the United States, with the surveillance systems we've had in place, that the prevalence of the disease is very low. There has been a noted lack of consumer confidence in the European Union and Japan, leading to programs with extensive testing, even of populations that are not susceptible to the disease, or certainly would not yet be testing positive to the current tests that we have for this disease. I've made the comparison that this would be the same as a physician testing every patient that came through the door for prostate cancer, male, female, young, or old, when in fact it certainly makes sense from a scientific basis to test the population most at risk. Obviously, there's been pressure on us to follow their lead, to follow that model, regardless of the difference of the situation between what's happening in North America and what's happened in other parts of the world with regard to this particular disease, and in spite of what we know about the science and the progression of BSE. I'll just touch briefly on the trade impact. Again, you've heard presentations even this morning about the huge impact of losing those export markets for beef and beef products. The international reaction to a country declaring a case of BSE within their borders has been largely, in the past, based on public perception and not on the science and not what we know about the relative risk, or I should say, safety of trading in certain products. In fact, the U.S. was part of that problem in the past, in that when a country declared a case of BSE, we simply shut them off immediately and for all beef and beef products. We were, in fact, in the midst of trying to change that, to change the international reaction to one that's based on science and indeed based on existing international standards that are based on science. We were doing that following the finding of the case on May 20th in Canada by allowing the importation of certain cuts of meat and other products in from Canada. Those products that, again, we know from the science do not represent any public health risk. In fact, if we don't change that, and I can assure you our commitment to continue to change that and have an international trade policy that's based on science, but if we don't do that, we in fact are creating a disincentive for countries to honestly report a case of BSE. That's a situation that we can't tolerate with regard to any disease. So I'm concerned, and certainly doing our part, to ensure that our future decision-making on our BSE program will be based on science and based on international standards that are based on that science, and not just totally based on public perception, and especially not based on public perception of the public in the countries of some of our trading partners. Congressional interest in this whole situation, as no surprise to anyone, has been high. We've had over half a dozen briefings for Hill staffers, and in fact already had two hearings on BSE on Capitol Hill. No doubt there will be lots of legislation introduced. I think we all have a role to play to ensure that any legislation that might get passed is not a knee-jerk reaction, but in fact is science-based and based on the needs that we have, again, to appropriately deal with this situation. Last, but perhaps most important of all, we need a nationwide animal identification program. Because BSE is not a contagious disease, it's, thank goodness, not one that is spread animal to animal just by direct contact in a pasture or in a feedlot or in a dairy barn. It is spread exclusively, primarily, if not exclusively, by consumption of contaminated feed. We've had the luxury of days and even weeks to do our epidemiological tracing to try and find the animals that entered the United States along with this one positive cow. But consider this scenario if we were talking about a highly contagious disease, such as foot and mouth disease, one that just by passing contact animal to animal, the disease can spread. And the fact is, in that situation, we would need to know what animals had been exposed to infected animals and be able to trace those animals, not in a matter of weeks, not in a matter of days, but rather in a matter of hours. And it's only through a nationwide electronic-based animal identification system that we'll be able to do that. So I look at the emphasis that's now being put on a national animal identification program as one of, if not the most important, silver linings of this whole incident. I was going to go through a chronology of the whole situation, but I think in the interest of time, I won't do that. I think most of you are probably very familiar with that already. So the only point in the chronology that I'll give you is probably the most important fact, and that is it starts on April 9th, 1997, with the birth of this cow. That date is particularly important because it predates the imposition of a feed ban either in Canada or the United States, and therefore presents a mechanism or a likely route of infection for this particular animal. So rather than go through the chronology, let me instead focus on our epidemiological investigation and what we're doing. We know, of course, that this positive animal was in a group of 81 that came into the United States in September of 2001. So our focus is on finding those other 80 animals. Indeed, we have found a large number of them, 28 in total so far, which, considering the time period and the time that has elapsed since then, and the lack of a national ID system, is actually quite remarkable. But the animals that we have the most interest in is actually a subset of those 81 animals. By international standards, those animals that are most at risk would be those that are born a year before or a year after a positive animal. So since this animal was born on April 9th of 97, we're focusing our efforts on the 25 animals that were born on that herd in Alberta, Canada, between April 9th, 1996 and April 9th, 1998. And in fact, of those 25 animals, we have definitely identified the location of 14 of them. As we look for those animals and trace to a number of herds, we're going through those herds. These would be herds that do contain or might contain one or more of those 81 animals. We're going through a process of elimination. Those that obviously have tags that we know make them part of that 81, we're identifying. Those that may have lost their identification, we're going through a process of elimination where animals that are less than 2 years old, animals that were born in those herds, animals that were added to those herds outside the time frame when these 81 came into the country, and a number of other factors, we're narrowing those very large dairy herds into much smaller population, and then we are euthanizing and testing those animals. So far, we have tested 242. We have results back on 227 of them. In fact, obviously, all of those 227 are negative. I think it's also time to recognize that we're not going to find all 81 animals. In fact, we're not going to find all 25 of those animals that we consider of the most significance. But I would quickly add, that's okay. And that's okay because we know, even from the European experience, that in a positive herd, typically only one or two animals is found to be positive, even though many of the animals may have been exposed to the same feed. Second, it's not a contagious disease. It's only through consumption of contaminated feed, or perhaps the unlikely scenario that a mother would pass it on to her calves. And yes, we have traced the calves from this positive cow. We've had a feed ban in place since 1997, so the risk that may have been there, we have immeasurably reduced through the imposition of our feed ban. Animals that out of that group that may have gone to slaughter, if they were exhibiting any central nervous system disorder, as you would expect to find with an animal showing clinical signs of mad cow disease, would have been condemned. And of course, we now have many new measures to improve our safeguards, as announced by the Secretary this morning and at her press conference on December 30th. So, in the next couple of weeks, our job is to wrap up that investigation, conclude what we can from the investigation, and second, receive the report from the International Review Subcommittee, that international team of experts. Once we have that information, we'll be able to focus from a science-based perspective, regaining our export markets. Not surprisingly, our trading partners are suggesting that before they would take any action to lift any of the restrictions, They want to know the results of the investigation. They want to know what the recommendations are of that international review team and what our response will be to that, to those recommendations. So we, in fact, are actively working on both fronts, and I think we'll have a meaningful story to tell in that regard to our trading partners in 2 to 3 weeks' time. We are also focusing on changing our surveillance program. As you know, that surveillance program has been intended to determine, one, do we have the disease in the United States or not, and if so, at what prevalence. We've been testing significant numbers of high-risk animals over the past 5 or 6 years, and so we feel comfortable saying that if we have the disease in our native-born population, it's certainly at a low prevalence. But we also know that by targeting the most likely animals to show the disease, they were getting the most bang for our surveillance dollar, if you will. This is, in fact, confirmed by OIE standards, and even as the international organization, the OIE, goes about updating their BSE chapter, they're recognizing the relative importance of some animals or value of some animals in a surveillance program. Their estimation is that you have to test about 10,000 normal slaughter animals to get the same relative value of testing one animal that's showing signs of central nervous system disorder. But in fact, you need to test about 100 normal slaughter animals to have the same relative value of testing one animal that is non-ambulatory or fallen stock, as they would say in Europe. So we are certainly interested in the recommendations from the International Review Team, since they are a group of scientists and will no doubt be basing their recommendations on the science. I would suggest that they will probably tell us to continue to emphasize those particular populations in our surveillance program. With that, I will conclude. Again, I'm honored by the opportunity to be here, by the accolades that I have received, and I can only in good conscience receive them on behalf of the many, many people that have been part of this overall response. I'm just simply pleased that through the God-given gifts that I have, I've been able to be part of that response. Thank you very much for your attention.